Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our Enlightened Networking 30 Minutes of Wisdom Weekly Telenar Series. This is Gregory Mascari from Bozeman, Montana, a little early here, and I want to thank everyone for joining us this Friday morning for our special Friday morning success call. And as you know, every Friday morning we invite top leaders, speakers, authors to share their time-tested principles and philosophies to help us chart our course to success in life, in our business, in our home, and in our community. And these calls are for people in all companies, in all businesses. You can look forward to learning how to live a more empowered life with purpose and passion, and developing some of your leadership skills, and learning to overcome obstacles with ease and grace. We're very excited about our speaker today. She brings forward decades and decades of wisdom and knowledge from one of the cornerstone and icons of our profession and our philosophies of personal development and growth. And I'm going to turn this portion of the call over to my beloved partner in life, my wife, Robin Blank Mascari.
Well, thank you, Gregory, and thank you, everyone, for being with us this morning live or on the recording. Many of you are joining us on the recording, and I am thrilled that you're here. I just love that I get to share these great treasures with you, and this morning's guest is another one of those great treasures. I just, when I think of her, I smile. Our guest this morning is the youngest daughter of America's Motivator. And she is she has a unique perspective, being the daughter of a legend. She carries on his legacy of encouragement, but she also has her own message, and it's a very, very important message. Thinking many people think that it's an easy path to grow up the way she did, but she has had her own struggles, and she has embraced them. And I love this quote about getting past the past, that she's an author, she's an international speaker, she's been on the stage with the greats, General Colin Powell, Dr. Robert Schuller, Bill Cosby, Steve Forbes, has been to those big, big, big Get Motivated seminars and shared the stage with the greats. But my experience of this special woman is I met her at a conference and got to have some up-close and personal time with her and was so deeply touched by her graciousness, her love and respect of her father and everyone around. And like I said, when I think of her, I smile. She has this joy. Her storytelling is brilliant. It's deep, it's touching, it's wise, and she leaves a lasting impact on people's hearts and minds. So it is my privilege this morning to share a great treasure of our time, the light who carries on her father Zig Ziglar's legacy of encouragement, Julie Ziglar Norman. Good morning, Julie.
Oh, good morning, Robin. I tell you what, girl, that was the most kind and wonderful introduction I do believe I have ever had. I feel more special and loved than I've felt in a long time.
Oh, well, I'm already crying. Julie, I you know, when I met you, it was such a gift to just be in your presence and watch how you were with a situation that's not easy. And I know, you know, there's a question because of who you are and the family you've been raised in that you get asked more than any other. Julie, what was it like to grow up Ziglar?
Oh, that is the big question, and that's the one I do like to answer first because everybody wonders. And you know, I have to say, I can't imagine a father any more loving, kind, generous, supportive, encouraging than my father. And the relationship that he has with my mother is an inspiration to all who see them and who have seen them together through the years. Unfortunately, you know how we are. We actually are independent units from our parents, and sometimes we make decisions that don't have a lot to do with anything they've tried to teach us. And I was one of those. So, but my experience growing up with my father, of course, was a little different than my brother, who's 10 years younger. And Dad, for me, was a traveling salesman. He went door to door, sold pots and pans. He was pretty much gone from Monday to Friday evening. He was always super happy and positive when he was home. Our whole family kind of had this sense of waiting, like everything, you know, was going to be great when Dad got home. And it was fine when he wasn't there, but we all loved him and loved his presence so much that our week was set by when's Dad getting home, because he was just so great to be around. But my daddy was a guy who made his living selling on straight commission. And so for me, Mom was either saving money for when maybe sales slowed down. So whenever we had plenty, it still felt like, you know, we were just getting by because Mom was saving for the rainy day. So for me, it was kind of a, it wasn't the, somebody once said, oh, that's Zig Ziglar's daughter. I know she's rich. And I'm like, oh, think again. You know, they also allowed us to be independent and finding our own way and our own work in the world. And so though Dad has been quite successful, he's a smart man, a wise man, and, you know, he allowed us to make our own way and find our own way. But I tell you, when he started becoming famous, I was 18 years old, so I was pretty much grown and up and out of the house. But the example he set early on did come back and influence me later. Now, I did grow up with a positive attitude because we weren't allowed to have any other kind.
Thinking, huh?
No thinking allowed. And he actually did kind of just help us avoid even getting that pattern started, because he always presented the other way to look at it. And, you know, it's a growth opportunity. You know, we didn't have weekends. We had strong ends that we looked forward to. And Daddy just, we weren't allowed to say negative words like idiot or you're stupid, or say harmful or hurtful things, or even use a tone of voice was not acceptable, not with my parents and not with each other as the children. And we just grew up respecting one another in our household. And I cannot tell you how that one thing alone, being taught that you don't have to raise your voice to make your point, that everything can be discussed at a conversational tone, that has had a bigger impact, I think, on my life than anything. People often ask me, you know, how is it that you don't get upset? And I'm like, well, you know, that there are emotions here. There's just no reason to act out what I'm feeling when we can just discuss it. And so my grandchildren. Yeah,
I hope everyone heard that.
Yeah.
You don't have to raise your voice to make a point.
Mm-mm.
What an empowering position to come from. Wow.
And you know, Robin, when you do raise your voice, it's the first indication that you're losing control.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The point of power is from our center and staying neutral, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Wow. So you grew up with a solid, solid foundation, but that doesn't mean you had an easy life, does it?
No.
I do want to say that the transparency that you were raised with your father and how open and transparent he was, and the relationship with your daddy and your mommy, and the times that weren't easy, has transferred on, and both of you are so open about sharing the parts that weren't easy. And something happened several years ago that was life-changing for the whole family. So would you share a little bit about that and how the idea for the book Embrace the Struggle came about?
Okay. It was March 7th, 2007, and Dad had a fall down the stairs at home. He had just gotten up to write down one of his late night thoughts. He didn't want it to get away from him. He didn't turn on the light. And the big staircase is just right there by his office door, and his foot apparently just went out there in midair. And when he landed on the marble floor 13 steps below, he hit his head on that floor, and then he slammed his head into the front door, and that resulted in two brain bleeds. And 12 hours later, my dad had irreversible, profound short-term memory loss. And that accident, as a professional speaker, a man who could get up and literally do 8 hours worth of material a day and never look at a note, changed his life completely. He couldn't remember what he had said 3 minutes earlier. And that completely changed the outlook for the future. Most people would have said, that's it. Not my father. His concern was his obligation to the people that he already had agreed to come to their event, and he didn't want to disappoint. He didn't want to let down. And he figured out that he could go and do what he'd always done with somebody interviewing him. Peter Lowe at the Big Get Motivated seminars recommended that they could let him sit in a chair because he also got really, really bad vertigo from that fall initially. And so they put him in a chair and had somebody interview him. And they were having a problem because anybody they asked to do it respected him so much they couldn't interrupt him when he would ask someone to go back and start to repeat himself. So anyway, they figured out that it would be easier for me to do than anybody else since I'd been his editor for, at that time, I'd been editing for him about 14 years. And I was so used to correcting his written words, I figured I wouldn't have any trouble correcting his spoken word either. And you know, it really did work out well for me to go with him. I knew, and I still know all of his stories. And it was such a blessed time to spend those almost 4 years on the platform with him, helping him encourage people. Because his big deal was not, that Zig Ziglar needed to quit while he was ahead, while people could remember him as perfect. His concern was that he live out the philosophy he has always taught, and that is that your best is good enough. You go as far as you can see, and then you can see further. And it's all about helping other people get what they want. So,
wow.
He lived it out.
4 years, and it began a whole new career for you because you weren't a platform speaker, were you?
No. I was
that wasn't what you had in mind, did you?
It never occurred to me to speak. That's what my father did.
What was the size of your first audience, Julie?
18,000.
When I was reading that, and everyone, Julie's got several great websites, and they're so touching because you can see her in action on videos, and you can read her stories at julieziglernorman.com and growingupziglar.com. And, you know, when you hear that and you realize that the number one fear is public speaking, and Julie's first audience was 18,000 people, and what happened from there?
Well, it went over so well, we just kept going, but I began to be invited to speak independent of Dad. People were interested to know, how having him for a father influenced my life, because he has had such a positive influence on the lives of hundreds of thousands of people who give him credit for having said something in a book or from the stage or on a CD that has changed their lives completely. And
I think you can easily say millions, don't you think?
Yeah, millions.
Yeah, because you've been on the stage. I think so many of us quote your dad and don't even realize it because it's so ingrained in us because we've heard it so many times. And so you started this career, but if we can go back a little bit, because it was not smooth sailing early on in your career and in your life, and I think you've got a really powerful message that I think is so important for people to hear, and I'm so grateful for your transparency, because you didn't make all the best choices, and you ended up in some places that were not the highest place. So could you share a little bit about your past and then, how you got past your past? Because we all have pasts. We've all made choices that weren't, in looking back that we wish we wouldn't have, but, we did them. So if you could share, that would be really helpful.
Okay. Well, I'll give a little short disclaimer on my father's behalf, and that is that you know, as when your children are growing up, they do actually leave your house and go to school, and other people influence them, other children, other teachers, this sort of thing. And even though my dad was putting in positive stuff, I was a snipe. I was one of those people who was susceptible to the negative influence of other people because I was a people-pleasing person, and everybody's opinion counted. And a few people made remarks that made me think that I wasn't very smart, and a couple of them were teachers. I think I was probably ADD before it was diagnosed. I just wanted to be outside, not in the classroom. But I got the impression that I couldn't learn, and I had some kids call me dense and a few other things. And, of course, I believed everybody else over the people who loved me most. So I had a self-image issue to start with, and I think that just fed into everything. But I got involved with the wrong crowd when we moved to Texas. It was a very hard transition. I was 13. I'd been in in with the cheerleaders on student council and all that good stuff in South Carolina where we moved from. And I was, they call me a hick, a country bumpkin. I had a bad southern accent when we moved to Texas. And anyway, long story short, I got in with the wrong crowd. And even though I was not an outwardly rebellious kid, I did everything my parents asked. I never spoke back. I had a job from the time I was 14. I made really good grades. I graduated a year early, but that was motivated by the fact that I hated school so much because I had such a bad reputation. And it started out with a rumor a girl started about me, but I ended up earning it. So I married a guy twice my age when I was 18 against my parents' wishes. 3 years later, my little girl was born, and my dad had always taught us that there were only two reasons you could come home after you were married, and one was if your husband became a habitual adulterer, and I want y'all to hear that word habitual, because anybody can mess up once, maybe twice, and the other reason was if my husband ever beat me. And let's just say I ended up going home, leaving him when my daughter was 3 months old. And I am the inspiration for slow learners out there. If there are any of you who have just made one mistake after another, I am just proof that even though it can take years to turn it all around, it can be done. But I became an alcoholic because I did not know how to handle negative feelings. I wasn't sure what to do with them. I had really been raised to believe that you you just, you know, control your thinking, think better, you'll do better. Didn't know what to do with true sadness, and you know, which I suffered a lot of after my divorce, and then I made a couple other bad choices. I had two abortions in my early 20s. All of this, y'all need to understand, my dad wasn't a Christian when I was growing up. I was almost 18 before that happened for him. So I didn't have the instruction, the principles for, you know, how to live really a moral life or a life where you would be the right kind of person that my dad talked about. I was taught to be, to not to break the law and to be honest. But I really did have a secret life my parents didn't know anything about because I appeared so okay. I was so positive in front of everybody that nobody figured out that I was really suffering and dying inside. So it took a while. I've been sober 25 years now. I was 30 when I realized that wasn't getting me anywhere. And my process for coming to a place where I understood that I wasn't dumb or dense, that I was worthy of friends and friendship, that I was lovable and loving. I mean, it was a long road. And you would think with my father's influence, all of that would have just been there. But I believe some of us just kind of start out with this true disbelief in ourselves that we have to find a way to come to a place to love ourselves and appreciate the special uniqueness of ourselves. And believe me, I'm unique.
And yes, you are. And I'd love to hear, was there a point of awareness? Was there, you know, something that helped you make that shift in your life and your lifestyle and about yourself? Because we all have things in our past. And, you know, I love this quote of yours. I mean, it's one of my favorites. You can get past your past, but you have to go through it to get beyond it.
That's right. You know, so many people try to just keep living in the past, and they let the regrets of the past just ruin today. And when I say you have to go through it to get beyond it, to go through it means that you have made a decision that you're not going to stay in it. You're not going to stay in it. And that day has to come where you just say, this is past, and it is what it is, and I'm moving forward and letting go of that. And until you do that, you're not going to get beyond it. And I have learned to take my thoughts captive, and I didn't understand that that was something I could do. I thought it was just, you know, oh, just think positive things, like say positive quotes and it would overcome it. But no, what it really means is when the negative, self-incriminating self-talk begins in your mind, when you have those conversations in your mind where you demean and demolish yourself, that's when you have to take that thought captive and usher it out and say, I will not go there, no way, and just force yourself to think about the next thing. They're not allowed in. Those thoughts cannot be allowed in.
How did you get there? How did you get from that old place to the new place? Because we all deal with it.
Yes, uh-huh. You know, I really have kind of felt sorry for people who don't get addictions and can't find never have access to a 12-step program. I really believe it was that process of admitting I had a problem with alcohol and then learning how to let go of it and work through all the stuff that led to it that helped me get to a place where I could do that. That's where I learned not to be afraid, because I really do believe we are as sick as our secrets. And I had, you can imagine, as Zig Ziglar's daughter, they were all secrets for me. Because if anybody found out his daughter was so messed up, it would be a bad reflection on my dad. And I adore him. I adored him then. I did not want him to be hurt by all the bad stuff that I had done, because I'd done it all on my own without his knowledge. And I can tell you, it's because he travels so much that he missed a great deal of that. And he regrets that he, you know, he wasn't there to catch on. But I was a master at hiding it. I don't know if he'd been there, he could have caught it or not. But that,
and I think, you know, that quote you just said, we are as sick as our secrets, and the courage it takes to wake up and tell the truth. And it sounds like what you did was, you know, you reached out and you got help. And, you know, there's so many different resources available. You know, there's another quote here, pain and struggle bring wisdom and force focus. Uh-huh. You know, what you were saying about having an addiction actually helped you get on the path. So were there any other resources or things that you can share with people? Because we all have them. You know, we all do. And go ahead.
Yes, Robin, I will tell you. For me, I'm, you know, my faith, I'm a Christian, and I get all of my wisdom from the book. I call it the manual for life, really. And so I have that resource that I use, and that faith that really, really moves me. But I also, to deal with the abortion issues, because that was my biggest regret, and that's really what brought on the alcoholism full force, was that situation. And the only way I got through that was post-abortion counseling through a crisis pregnancy center. So if anybody's listening, that really held me back, because it was just, it was always under there, and that was the deepest and darkest of my secrets, because it's the one I had the most regret about, and I couldn't work on it, couldn't deal with the emotion. and felt like I would just die if I ever allowed myself to grieve those babies. And so post-abortion counseling helped me to be set free from that, to be able to talk about it and help other women to suffer with that syndrome like I did. And that was the final deal. And I had a lady come to me in church one day and say, "Julie, I had a dream, and I don't understand it, but I'm supposed to tell you that you are to do the thing that's been put in front of you, and God cannot fully use you until you've done it." And I had just been invited to go to a post-abortion syndrome group, and I had said no because I didn't want to deal with it. But I've lived long enough to become willing, available, and obedient to God, and I said, "Oh, shoot. Now I have to go." But he knew
it was the time to heal that dark secret. Yeah. And, you know, your life is such an inspiration to so many, and you're on this solid path, and you've taken the platform, and you've got this great book out that you know, is sharing your stories, Embrace the Struggle. But you have your own journey. So where are you headed? What's next for you, Julie?
Well, I'm excited to say that Guidepost, that's the little spiritual magazine that Dr. Norman Vincent and Ruth Hill started over 60 years, I think. And that little magazine is done through the mail. But they started publishing books about 4 years ago, and they have asked me to do my story growing up Ziegler with them. So that's the next project. That book will be out this spring. And, of course, I am still speaking and just doing what God puts in front of me, really. That's the size of it, Robin. I've learned that he's big enough to put his purpose in front of me, and all I have to do is be willing and available and obedient. And the course goes where it's supposed to. And that's what's ahead of me. It's exciting. I'm always thrilled to see what's next.
You never know. And it was so wonderful to meet you. It was at an honoring of your father for a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Direct Selling Women's Alliance celebration. And you and your mommy were there, and it was a beautiful, touching ceremony, captured for the group that was there, but filmed. And you know, the legacy that he leaves through you of, so we have just like a minute or so left, and that legacy of encouragement. Can you talk a little bit about that as we complete our 30 minutes of wisdom this morning? Because that is the message that your father just, I heard over and over every time someone new came to sit with him with the book. He goes, "Have you encouraged someone lately?" Could you share a little bit about that?
Yes, Dad says everybody needs a little encouragement. And that the world just doesn't have enough of that. People don't do it naturally. And so that quote he has, "You can have everything in life you want if you'll just help enough other people get what they want," is based on encouraging other people. And he made it his mission. One man, Mr. P.C. Merrill, told him he could be a great one if he would just apply himself and show up at a consistent time every day start his job. He said, "You could be a great one." Nobody had ever said that to Dad, and he made it his life mission to be the PC Merrill in the lives of as many other people as he could be, because he knew the difference it had made to the one poor little boy from the Mississippi Delta.
Wow. Yeah. Whoa. I hope everyone really, really takes that to heart, because every day we have an opportunity to encourage someone, and we never know what a difference it's going to make. Gregory, do you have anything you want to share with Julie?
Well, I just want to say, Julie, how incredibly grateful I am, and just totally delighted and impressed with you and your family and the inspiration you and your dad and your whole family have been to so many thousands and millions of people, and you walk the path that we can all follow, because we've all tripped and fallen, and as the old saying goes, it's not how many times you fall, it's how many times you get back up. And what comes to mind is one of my favorite sayings is, "I can't wait to see what God's got in store for me next."
Yeah, exactly. My feelings exactly, Gregory. Thanks.
Yeah. So you've just been a such a gift to all and such a gift to our call here this morning. So thank you so very, very much.
Well, thanks for having me. I've enjoyed it. And Robin, you know, I just felt the same way about you and Gregory. Just as our eyes met, I knew we had a lifelong friendship, and I'm just looking forward to getting with you guys soon.
We're going to create some wonderful things together. So I want to thank everyone for being with us for our 30 minutes of wisdom. Julie agreed to stay on for a Q&A, so we'll stop our recording in just a moment and spend a few minutes with Julie and let you know that next week we have Don Ginn on. Many of you may or may not know Don, but he is one of the finest facilitators on understanding, learning, and the art and skill of listening from a very deep place. So Don Ginn will be on next week, and at this time we're going to complete our 30 minutes of wisdom.
And I just want to jump in and invite everyone to share the replay number freely with friends, family, and associates. We always love the replays to get out and touch as many people as possible. We also would like to encourage people to register at enlightennetworking.com so they can get the weekly notices of the calls personally themselves for you and your team. You can rest assured the list will be kept in the utmost confidence, never used for any promotion or solicitation to any business opportunity. This is a safe space we're creating for people from all professions and all companies to come together and just learn from the greats. And thank you, Julie. You certainly are filling some big shoes and doing a great job at it because you've brought so much to us here today. So I'll go ahead and stop the recording. So thanks, everyone, for joining us here on Enlightened Networking 30 Minutes of Wisdom.